WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. African-American men from around the country are traveling to Washington, D.C. for Monday's Million Man March. Described by its organizers as a day of atonement and recommitment to family and community, the demonstration is also intended to raise the nation's consciousness about the economic and social predicament of black men. Ben Chavis, one of the organizers, says this will be the broadest display of black unity in American history. But some African-American leaders are not endorsing this march, in part because of its controversial leader, Louis Farrakhan. We'll be hearing several points of view on the Million Man March. My first guest, Terry Johnson, is the head of communications with the march's Philadelphia Organizing Committee. He publishes an African-American paper in Philadelphia called The Real News, is a former senior editor at The Village Voice, and a former general editor at Newsweek. I asked him if he had personal reasons for helping to organize the march.
I've always been involved in the movement, in the black movement. I think perhaps since the age of 12, I've been involved. And my involvement, I've always tried to make it more than just a sort of peripheral or occasional concern. I mean, I try to spend the time reading and studying social and economic movements, so on and so forth, to have a real, intellectual understanding as well as a practical understanding through involvement, of the movement. So participating in the march is really a very natural thing for me to do.
What is the march about?
The march is about recommitment to the struggle for justice on an individual level and on a collective level within the African-American community. And in some ways, when you say atonement and recommitment, it has a very general meaning, but there are also some very specific things about that, too, because one can only recommit themselves, not just, to their individual pursuits, but also to the social pursuits. We are, after all, social beings. And so it's a recommitment to the struggle for social justice for African-Americans, and I would argue for every American.
The Million Man March is being described as a day of atonement. Who is atoning and for what?
One of the things that I like to be very clear about, because, even in the African-American community, the sense that some people have is that black men will be going down to Washington, sort of hanging our heads and say, guilty as charged by European Americans. We have been derelict fathers, we've been criminals, we've been drug dealers. But that's not what it's about, and that's not what we are atoning for. What we're doing is atoning for our, I guess, lack of commitment in an intense kind of way to the struggle for social and economic justice. That's what we're most concerned about and most focused on.
Now, you're walking to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you walking?
Well, I'm walking with a group of people. I'm joining them, actually. They've been on the road for 2 days now. There are an interesting group of people that are walking. The leader of the group is a guy named Jerome Dorn, a Vietnam veteran. And Jerome says he suffers from post-traumatic stress syndrome. And when we initially started talking about the idea of the march, Jerome said he wanted to go for all those African-American men, all those brothers that didn't make it back from Vietnam. He also wanted to march for all those brothers who are incarcerated or locked down in some form in America's prisons and jails. He wanted to march on their behalf. But also along with Jerome are 20 participants in a program called Germantown Turn It Over, drug addicts, alcoholics who are making that march. It's a tremendous commitment. And each one of those people have their own reasons for wanting to march. But for me, the symbol of the march is that we're very serious about change in America. We're serious about it. We're willing to take a bus to get down to Washington to press our point. But we're also willing to use other means to get to Washington to press our point. And I think the people who are walking are the symbols of that determination to bring about serious and fundamental change in America.
When do you start walking?
I will leave either tonight or tomorrow morning, taking provisions, water, as well as socks and whatnot to the people who are on the road. And then we'll, walk from wherever I catch up with them into D.C.
What's your route?
We're taking the route of the Underground Railroad, which is down Route 1. And there are several significant stops laid out by Charlie Blackson, the noted historian, places where runaway slaves rested and where anti-slavery rallies and meetings and so forth were held. And we think that that's a very important symbol.
One of the controversies surrounding the Million Man March is that it's a man march. There's mm-hmm. women have been asked to not come, mm-hmm. although two women will be speaking, Rosa Parks and Maya Angelou. What's your understanding of the reasons for asking women to not participate in the march?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think that there are two sources of that kind of thinking. One, I think there are special conditions that African American men face, and not to say they're any worse or more urgent than the issues facing African American women. But there is a disproportionate number of African American men who are, you know, in prisons and jails, dying of various diseases and whatnot at, you know, premature ages. Unemployment is extremely high, drug and alcohol addiction. So I think there are some particular problems that African American men face. And also, I think racism has done a particularly dastardly job in eroding the humanity of African-American men. So a political move like this, I think, is a reaffirmation of our humanity as black people, but also, you know, as males. And I don't see it as necessarily a contradiction in any way or antagonistic to the notion of African-American women, feminism, or even, you know, womanist thinking. I think that, you know, there can be times when it's appropriate for men to sit together, just as there are times when it's appropriate for women to sit together because of particular concerns about, women.
The march, in a way, is important in part because of its symbolic value.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully a million men, this is what you're hoping for, mm-hmm. gathering in Washington for a day of atonement. I mean, this is about symbolism and about personal transformation mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Given the symbolic value of the march, I wonder how you feel about one of the main organizers of the march, Louis Farrakhan, and his symbolic value, because for a lot of people in America, what he symbolizes is divisiveness.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women have been uncomfortable with his views about women. Gay people are uncomfortable with his views about gays. Jewish people are uncomfortable with what he said about Jews. A lot of white people are uncomfortable with what he said about whites in general. So I'd like you to speak to the symbolic value of mm-hmm. Farrakhan heading mm-hmm. the march.
You know, I think it was maybe in 1985. I went to an appearance by Farrakhan at Reverend Gray's church, Whitehall Baptist Church. It was a rainy day. It had been raining all day. Sky was gray. And there was a line of people, you know, out of the church and, you know, down the block, lined up to hear Louis Farrakhan speak. They filled the church sanctuary, the basement, and a recreation hall. And that many people there to hear Louis Farrakhan. And these weren't, you know, big city officials there and whatnot. These were just simply grassroots people in the black community to hear Louis Farrakhan's message. And I argue that the reason they were there is because what the Nation of Islam represents in its general sense is a trend in the, you know, intellectual development or the thinking of the black community that has very deep roots. It could be traced to Garveyism, and that's where the roots of the Nation of Islam go. And a lot of black people are drawn by that message of self-reliance and, you know, up you miney race and Africa for the Africans. Farrakhan represents that on the one hand. But also, too, and I think, you know, the other point that you're making is some of the comments that Farrakhan have made, you know, particularly comments that have been labeled, you know, anti-Jewish or anti-Semitic comments. I think I sort of view that as I think that there's a need for dialogue in America about racial questions. And as long as we suppress that dialogue, there are going to be occasion whenever a window sort of open or a door is open, there are going to be these shots of cold air that blast in. And you know, they hit people in the face and slap them around. And people don't understand how to interpret those things. So what I'm suggesting is that when Farrakhan's comments are made that sort of shake up people, that really is an opportunity for us to begin to engage in a dialogue about race relations in America. Because Farrakhan's comments are not just sort of isolated comments that simply are, you know, you find among, you know, one or two African Americans, but you find them among many African Americans who hold the sort of same views about Jews and about European Americans in general. And those are the kind of questions that we need to start talking about in America, rather than saying, well, what we should do is condemn each person that sort of, you know, raises their head and there's only one of them. You know, like the argument perhaps that there's only one Mark Furman. Now, while some people may hold that belief that Mark Furman is a rare creature, we don't, you know, a lot of African Americans don't hold that view. We think that the police department in and of itself is Mark Furman, that's how they operate with us. And we need to have a dialogue about how do we change the police department so that it's a positive thing.
Terry Johnson, you're head of the communications committee of the Philadelphia chapter of the Million Man March, and you've written up a list of goals, can we call it, for the march, a paper that you call What We Seek.
Right.
And this is not like a national agenda, but it's something you've written up that's what?
It's a document for the Philadelphia Local Organizing Committee, and it sort of lays out some of the things that we want to achieve, not just with this march, but with this movement in general. And, you know, it starts, of course, with this whole notion of recommitment to the struggle for justice, which is a recommitment to self. And it also demands reparations in America. And I think that a very compelling case can be made for that, you know, that African Americans are owed or need to be made whole because of the contributions that their ancestors made to providing the basis for wealth in America and the continuing discrimination that we face in the workplace now. But also we think that reparations should be a first step toward economic justice for all Americans. 1% of the population controls between 40% and 60% of the wealth. That's not good for African Americans, but that's not good for working Americans in general. And that's certainly not good for any notions of democracy in America. We want to change that.
I'm going to ask you one O.J. Simpson question because I think, you know, when the verdict came down, so much of the reaction seemed to divide along racial lines. And I think everybody's been trying, scratching their heads and thinking, what are we to make of this? What does this tell us about race in America? And, you know, I was reading something that you wrote called The Vision, which is a statement about, you know, the vision for the march. And you wrote, we believe we must atone for the abuse and misuse of our women and girls. And I was reading that and thinking, wondering what went through your mind when you saw a lot of African Americans cheering O.J. Simpson's not guilty verdict, knowing that, you know, whether he's innocent or guilty of murder, he did abuse his wife. I mean, that's just uncontested. I think it's been something that's been so hard for a lot of people to reconcile, the applause. For someone who undeniably beat his wife.
Well, you know, I can compare it to something. You know, when the president walks in the room, you know, they play Hail to the Chief, you know. And I could, you know, look at George Bush or, you know, even Bill Clinton and see some of the things that they've done and this country has done to people. And nevertheless, people applaud. They snap to attention and say, well, you know, what's more important? You know, the fact that maybe we killed, you know, some Iraqis when they were ready to surrender and on the run, or, you know, the fact that we allow discrimination and sexism to remain rampant in the country, and we still applaud and cheer and snap to attention, you know, because of these other concerns. And I think that for Black people, what we were thinking is, listen, you know, there's also this issue of justice here in America, whether we can get justice in the courts. And when I hear people talk about O.J. and they say, well, you know, Jesus Christ, you know, Black people cheering a man beat his wife, you know, and I say, damn, you know, I can tell you some stories about some things that I see going on in my community as a result of racism and injustice, and no one says a word, you know, and particularly white America stands by silent and shaking its head too often, saying, oh, boy, those crazy niggas, you know, and I see the terrible things that are coming as a result of the setup that has benefited some European Americans in this country. And to the detriment of my people. You know, one of the things that also kind of compels me to be involved in this march, not long ago, I lost a nephew, shot and killed. He may have been, you know, selling drugs and whatnot. But I know that from the moment that he was born, he never really had a chance in the first place. Right now in America, you could walk into a room full of newborn babies, 12 babies, and without knowing much about the background of these babies, perhaps maybe the income, you can say some things about what's going to happen to those kids in the future. If they're 12 males, one's going to be murdered, the other's going to be the murderer. 50% of them are going to be going to drop out of school. And up until a certain age, maybe 60 to 70% of them will be unemployed. And as long as I know that happens, you know, what a horrible thing to have to live with, knowing that your children will not have a chance to breathe and ever really live. You know, now I hear European Americans say, well, Jesus Christ, you know, the O.J., and O.J. beat his wife, and aren't you guys pissed off, you know, about that? And, you know, we would be pissed off. But, you know, it's like, Jesus, you know, come to my community, come to my house, live in my world for a while.
Terry Johnson is the head of communications for the Philadelphia Local Organizing Committee of the Million Man March. This is Fresh Air.